From the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., this is Update One, the club's official podcast. It features newsworthy stories originating from the NPC facilities, as well as broader topics related to journalism, communications, press freedom, and transparency.
I'm Adam Cano, co-chair of the National Press Club's broadcast podcast team. Joining me is Steve Lott. He is author of the new book, Museum Flack, a public relations guide for museums. Steve, welcome to Update One.
Good to be here.
Let's start with you before we get to the book. You have a background in journalism and then PR. Tell us about it.
I do. In fact, I started my career as a journalist and started coming to the press club way back in the day. But I started in the trade publication world. Wrote for Aviation Week magazine, which is one of the large trade publications for aviation and aerospace. It was really there where I got a lot of my training when it came to writing, reporting, and telling a good story. And it was from Aviation Week writing for a trade publication that I eventually made the move to public relations.
Yeah. So tell us a little more about how that first career in journalism informed your approach as a PR practitioner in your day job and now as an author.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's really been very helpful now as a public relations professional, as an educator, teaching, helping mentor, young students. But it's really, I still think like a reporter. And what does that mean? That's really the base of what I do and my day job. And working in a newsroom, it taught me a lot. But some of the three points that it taught me along the way is news values rule all. And I write about what are news values in the book because we can all learn from that. Number two, time is tight for everyone. Whether you're a journalist, whether you're a public relations person, no matter what, time is tight, and that's important. And the last thing I want to call out is vague answers kill trust. So whether you're a journalist or whether you're public relations, if you're in public relations and you're trying to get answers that help you tell the story, vague answers kill trust. When you don't really have many details, a reporter won't trust you. At the same time, if you're a journalist, as you well know, and you're trying to get information and the public relations person isn't really giving you the full story or is particularly vague, that also leads to a break in trust. So another thing that I do is in PR, I start with the story. And that's really what you learn as a journalist. You start with the story. I don't start with a press release. I start with the story. I ask what is new, what matters now, who is hurt or helped. And if I can't answer that very quickly, I know that a reporter won't care about it either. So that's really important. My time as a reporter and a journalist also shaped how I treat the press, I think, as you know, now that I've been in the PR world for a long time. I don't really see reporters as fans or foes or the enemy. You know, a lot of what we see on TV today is accusations about fake news and the president attacking 60 Minutes and really going after press. And it's not just the president. We see this in Congress. We see that a lot in Washington. But really, as we know, the vast majority of journalists are pros and they have a job to do. They need clear facts, plain words, and fast help. So as an author, you know, I wrote the way I like to read as a young reporter. You know, short scenes, real examples, no jargon. Talk a lot about that in the book. Keep the jargon out of it. So really, the reason I wrote this book and what I pulled from in my background is my goal was to give museum staff a view from the other side of the email, so to speak, so that they can stop guessing what the press wants.
Yeah. So let's start there. Your background as a journalist and as a communicator is in the aerospace and defense field, broadly speaking. So why museums?
Sure. It's a good question. And I get that a lot since the book has come out. Two main reasons. Why museums is my wife worked in the museum field for almost 15 years. And she ultimately ran the Trade Association for Museum Professionals and museums as institutions called the American Alliance of Museums. Very large association, represents folks in the field, does a lot of advocacy, things like that. So it was my exposure to that world through my wife that I really started to sink my teeth in. I've always been a fan of museums, but she was and became an insider in terms of the museum field. I started reading about museums. I would see the daily clips about museums. And I started to see a trend that folks in the museum field don't have proper training in public relations or communications, or even sometimes marketing. The vast majority of museums in this country are very, very small, with generally tight budgets. They're not the Smithsonian. They're not the Met in New York. They're very, very small. So oftentimes, they don't have a communicator on staff. They don't have money for an agency. So they're pretty small. So I saw a need, for sure, in the museum field for this type of book. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a training guide. It's a textbook.
Before we get into what's in the book, just a couple mechanical questions. When did you start writing and how long did it take?
I started writing about 2 years ago, and that also coincided with I'm an adjunct professor at American University.
Full disclosure, so am I.
And I teach in the School of Communications. And when I started teaching that a few years ago, the textbook I had, it was fine, but it also was a little bit outdated. So really what sparked the book was two things. One was my background and my interest in museums, which I described. And then the second part of it was I was teaching every semester at American University, and I really wanted an updated textbook. So I took the curriculum I developed, worked that into the book, and also pulled in content from the museum field. So to answer the question, it was probably about 2 years all in from start to finish.
At the start of the book, you note, quote, "Museums are under a microscope and their leaders are often ill-equipped to handle the unexpected and frequently negative media attention," close quote. Why is that?
Yeah, so most museum leaders, executives, curators, they did not grow up in the public relations world or in the news world or as a journalist. They're often experts in art, science, history. At times they have, you know, they have multiple PhDs. Very, very smart people, but they don't necessarily know public relations, and they're not necessarily following trends in the news. So, you know, no one really showed them how a story moves through a newsroom or ends up on social media, or what are news values, or what makes up a good story. They certainly are good storytellers when it comes to history or science, but they're not necessarily in tune with what's going on in the world of public relations. The reason I say they're ill-equipped is many also think of their museum as a safe space. They see it, you know, people just have a high opinion of museums in their community and their town, and they see it as kind of the good guy in town. So museums really don't plan for crises. They don't plan for hard hits. They don't plan for criticism from the public. And they delay crisis drills. They just sort of put it on the back burner because everybody loves museums. So why worry about that kind of thing? Or they leave PR to a small team or a staffer who might run the website. But none of these people, all good intentioned, they're not properly trained.
You've mentioned marketing and PR a few times. Do you think part of the issue is maybe museum executives were too focused on the former at the expense of the latter?
In many cases, they have. Absolutely. When a crisis hits, people will fall back on kind of what they know, but again, they're not properly trained. And I think, you know, when we talk about when a crisis hits, they don't know what to do. They're not properly trained, and usually the first impulse is just to shut down, put your head in the sand, and don't say anything.
Right. Your chapters start with the acronym BLUF, bluff. What does it mean, and why use that device in the book?
For sure. So BLUF, bluff, stands for bottom line up front, and I was really first exposed to that through when I was doing public relations it was first when I was a journalist covering the Defense Department and the military, And then when I was in the public relations world working for a big aerospace company, Boeing, that I worked with a lot of veterans and people who were from the military. And I started seeing these emails and reports where it would have at the top of the, even a simple email, BLUF, bottom line up front. And it, what it stands for, or as I said, is bottom line up front. But what does that mean in practice? It's really, it's the goal is to put the most vital point in the first line, not in the last paragraph. So I use this acronym in my book for two main reasons. First, I think it sets the tone. It shows a respect for time. Museum staff already juggle a lot. As I said, public relations is not their day job. So the bottom line up front tells them right away what the chapter will help them do. And then second, I think it models how to think in a crisis or any press briefing or any interview for that matter. Reporters want the lead first, not at the end, right? This is how, you know, when I learned to write a story, you put the most important facts at the top of the story. So reporters want the lead first. They want the core of what changed, who was hurt or helped, what comes next. So if you can write a strong headline for any of your, you know, internal or external clients, customers, if you can write that strong bottom line up front, you can give a strong quote to reporter and you can summarize your story well.
After the book came out, you wrote a blog post for museums called Five Ways to Pitch Your Story. Why did you pick that topic as your first blog, and what are a few of your tips?
Yeah, for sure. In fact, the chapter in the book is called The Art of the Pitch. And the reason I use the word art, because it is very much art as opposed to science. I've been doing this for a long time, and writing a strong pitch to a journalist or reporter is still very much an art. But there is certainly some skill to it. And, you know, the reason I focused on this, I focus on pitching in my class, but I also focus on pitching in the book, because one of the key things I heard from museum professionals is we tried talking to the press, we tried pitching, but they never bite. And when I looked at what they would send as a pitch, the pitch is often not the real problem. The story is fine, the email is not. So it's really just the goal of this chapter and what I'm trying to get across is keys to pitching. And it's tactical things. It's writing the lead, writing a headline, grabbing their attention, keeping it short and concise. But then there's also other things, you know, tie your news to a bigger theme, know the journalist, not just the outlet, things like that.
You alluded to earlier the fact that museums have become lightning rods in an increasingly polarized society. You talked about executives sort of sticking their head in the sand and so forth. So how can they protect themselves when the megaphones on either side have become so deafening?
Yeah, and they are megaphones. You're absolutely right. But the point I try to make when I talk to, you know, people in the museum field is, and this goes for anybody, I tell this to my students too, is that you cannot mute the noise, but you can build a base before the next storm. So little things, be clear on your values and your lines. Know what you stand for on issues like labor, source of where you get your objects in your museum, how you share history, just some of the basic things related to your mission and vision. And write this down in plain language. Share it with the staff, share it with the board, share it with key partners. Second idea is to build real ties to your local area. In many small communities around the country, museums are all they've got. You know, they've got a library and they've got a museum and they're really community anchors. So this isn't just about a community partner on a slide deck. Talk with the groups who may not yet trust you. Let them help shape stories and words. And then the third thing is plan for hot topics in advance. Role play a protest over a donor. Draft some response lines for when staff might speak out in public. Decide in advance, well in advance, who speaks for the museum, who runs social feeds when tempers flare. Little things like that. You know, you don't have to have all the answers, but decide a process and do some planning can go a long way to help.
The second to last chapter is called Did Your Plan Work, which is about evaluating and measuring results. I think we tend to think of ROI from a marketing perspective, but why is that important in PR?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, as I like to say, plans feel good on paper. And when you get a clip in the news or in media, it feels really good. It feels very good. But neither quite tells you how it achieved your goals, right? And as you know, marketing and PR are different. But a lot of times we get hung up on vanity statistics, vanity data. We count clips, and I'm guilty of this too. You count the number of clips, you count the number of likes, and then that's it, and you move on. You pat yourself on the back and you move on. But what I try to do in this chapter about evaluation is I push readers to set goals at the start of each plan. What change do you want to see? Do you want more school visits from one particular zip code? Do you want fewer no comments in a news story? Do you want an increase in, you know, maybe memberships or visits or going to an exhibit? There's simple things you can set as goals, and then PR obviously can support those. So if you pick a few simple ways to track that, you can look back, and even if the results were mixed, you ask what worked, what didn't, and you do it differently next time.
The last chapter is simply called The Future, where you talk about trends in PR and journalism. It seems the biggest topic at the moment is AI. So what's your advice to museums and perhaps other nonprofits when it comes to the intersection between PR and AI?
Yeah. AI is one of those topics I think we could, you know, you and I could have three more podcasts about the subject of AI. So there's a lot to cover. But and even my own thinking when it comes to AI has evolved quite a bit. You know, for a while, AI, and it's still scary in many ways, but it became very much a negative thing. So whether it was my team in my day job, my staff, I would tell them, you know, don't you dare use AI to write a press release. You need to do that yourself. Or in our students at the university, we scare them and say, if you dare use AI, you're going to get yourself in trouble. It's considered cheating, which, you know, as I think about it now, we probably set the wrong tone. Whereas I've now seen how AI can become a very helpful resource. And what I say to my students is that my advice is to treat AI as a smart but kind of flaky intern. That they're very eager. They'll do a lot of research, but they don't necessarily have all the skills quite yet to write a story, to verify that the data is correct, that the information is correct. So AI can do a lot to do research. I found that to be very valuable. Write summaries. It can scan long reports, you know, especially in Washington, you know, whether it's a congressional bill or a white paper. Some of these can be hundreds of pages. So, you know, as we used to use that young, eager intern, we can use AI to scan those reports and provide summaries. But you must check every fact, every quote. You need to guard tone. You need to guard ethics. So really, you know, as I give advice to people in the museum field, AI can be very, very helpful, but you need to be careful. You need to avoid feeding perhaps private or confidential data into AI. Don't use AI to fake quotes or make up testimonials, things like that. So I think we can learn a lot from how journalists use AI, actually, because there's a lot of similarities. So I like to have conversations about AI with my friends in journalism, and then, okay, how can we then use that in the PR world? The last thing I'd say is, and this is very, very important in terms of showing the value of earned media, what we're learning now is AI tools are trained to go out and find credible sources of information, and AI technology sees earned media as the most credible information out there. So if we get our data, whatever your organization is, if you get our data out into the ether and covered in earned media, that will get picked up first and is seen as credible by these AI tools.
Last question. So what's your best advice to museums to either maintain the initiative or seize it back?
Number one, do not wait for a crisis to start acting like a communicator. I think I've seen that many, many times. I mean, just few in the past month where you'll see a museum leader get hit by a crisis when they least expect it, and then they're forced into the spotlight, and sometimes they're listening to their lawyers or they're getting advice from a board member. That's not the time to try to figure out your message and your story. So I would say tell your story on a calm day, build trust with the local press over time, give them real news, real people, not just spin. The other thing is inside your museum, and this goes for any nonprofit, inside the museum, make PR a shared job. Train leaders, key staff on how to talk in short, clear, honest lines. Run small drills. Celebrate when someone spots a risk early and flags something. But at the same time, also celebrate when somebody has a good story to share, right? It's not just an exhibit opening. It's not just, you know, the launch of a campaign. It can be a small win that should be raised up the chain, and we should learn to go out and tell that story to the media.
Steve, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Steve Lott is author of Museum Flack, a public relations guide for museums, for Update One in Washington. I'm Adam Cano.
You have been listening to Update One, the official podcast of the National Press Club, the world's leading professional organization for journalists and a vigorous advocate of press freedom worldwide. If you have any questions or comments about Update One, send an email to updateonepodcast@gmail.com.